Welcome back to Unit 10, Writing and the Critical Thinker. This is the Christian Leaders Institute, and we're in the class Reading and Writing for College Students. We're going to go to the second section of this unit called When the Critical Thinker Writes. So it's going to be more about writing, you as the writer, as a critical thinker. So when we, as the critical thinkers, write, we become better critical thinkers. It's really a circular process. The more we write, the more we think and think critically about what we're writing, the more we learn to think critically, and the more we, next time we write, we think more critically about what we're writing. It's a better way. It is really a tool. Writing is a tool that is able to help us sail better and more quickly and efficiently, the transportation that leads us to being true critical thinkers. Now, remember when I say true critical thinkers, I'm not talking about being negative about people. I'm talking about thinking in such a way that you validate or invalidate things as true or credible or worthy. And that's this idea of writing, making to make us critical thinkers, is really the aim of college papers. This is really the first aim. We want you to write papers so that you learn to take in information, think critically about it, and process it to be able to put it down in words. In your own words. Now, I need to warn you that sometimes we can be overly critical of ourselves and our writing. Now, this can happen in one of two ways, if not more. The first one is that we are saying our writing is just not good enough. It just, it's not what it, I'm just so bad at what I'm doing. That's the bad form of negative criticism that this critical thinking is not about, but it can creep into our thinking as critical thinkers. Whatever we do, we're going to do our best, and then we're going to leave the rest to God, right? Well, the other part of it is when we are overthinking what we need to do. I know that when I write very in-depth. I have all kinds of extra words and I have all kinds of extra thoughts. And when I go write them down in that first draft, it's way too long, way too wordy. And I have to go through and critically think about how I'm going to condense my wording and how I'm going to make it more succinct and what ideas are necessary and what ideas are not necessary. What ideas are valid and what ideas are not valid. And I go back and forth. If I don't do that, I'm going to sink myself as a writer because other people are going to go, what in the world? Why? This is taking too long. This is too boring. But in all of these processes, remember the golden rule. As you would have others do to you, so do to others. So if you are going to be showing a form of graciousness, which you should, to when you're reading other authors, make sure you show the same form of graciousness to yourself. Be truthful, be realistic about your writing, but don't be overly critical of it. So practice the golden rule for yourself, self-compassion. So, this brings us to the next question. There are questions that we went over that when we read a piece of literature, to read it critically, we have to ask ourselves. So now, when we are the author writing, we have to ask ourselves the same questions. Whether that is a written literary work for sale or an academic paper like you're going to be writing in CLI. So ask yourself, how reliable are my sources of information? How reliable is this source of information? Is it reliable enough to be put into my paper or not? Are my sources truthful? If there's something that's a slight twist to the truth and I know it, don't include it. It's not worth risking an untruthful statement because it somehow agrees with you think it agrees with your way of thinking. That's bad critical thinking. Can I back up? Can I support the argument that I'm trying to make? That's a question you have to keep asking through the whole talk, the whole process of writing. Can I back up my argument? Is this valid? Can I really state this? And how do I back it up? Is my evidence, is my evidence relevant? Is it accurate? Is it up to date? The same thing. My argument, is it based on false premises or false logic, bad logic? As I'm going through this, is my idea a good idea or a bad one? Maybe I've got to change it. Maybe I got to modify it. Maybe it's a completely bad idea that has to be put in the waste paper and start all over again. And so be that's okay. Many people do that. Is my idea or argument valid and defensible, or is it invalid and indefensible? Is it going to be sink me when people read it? Is my position rational and reasonable, or is it not? Is it too shallow to be and too unreasoned to be viable and valuable? Is my implication, am I presenting alternatives? And is my reasoning presented well on the other aspects, the other alternatives, why I reject or accept parts or pieces or all of those other ideas? Do I deal sufficiently with the complexity of the situation? C.S. Lewis was writing, he was going to write a book about love. It turned out to be the book, The Four Loves. And in his introduction or his preface in this book, he makes a statement that he thought when he started to write this, it would be a simple little treatise that would just be a few pages long. It turned out to be a whole book where he really dealt well and in depth with what love is, and the different forms, the eros, the agape, the phileos, the motherly love, and then the sexual love, as opposed to romantic love, the sexual love, which he called Venus. And he delved into these topics, and his book ended up being more like 150 to 200 pages long. So to really deal with the complexity of the situation of our concept of love in the English language, he ended up writing this huge book about it. Do I use cliches or stereotypes to get points across? Don't. If you do. Do I delve deep into the topic or only touch surface issues? Remember, a good critical thinker is going to delve to the depths of the topic. It's going to, he or she is going to see the different ways to look at it. He's going to go down into each of those venues, and it's going to take us out to the conclusions that each would make. Do I address the potential weaknesses and limitations? And do I question my own ideas, test them for validity? And what's the goal of my writing this? And is that goal a valid goal or not? There's other questions. What's the purpose of my thinking and writing, of my thinking in this writing? Why am I doing this? What's the precise question I'm answering and trying to answer, explore? What's the perspective I'm using? Is it the first person perspective where I am talking about something using the pronouns I? Is it a second person perspective where we're looking at it from another person's point of view? Is it a third person perspective or a kind of a global perspective where we're looking at it with kind of an omniscience of what's going on? What's the perspective that you're using? What is the worldview? What's the angle that you're using to approach this question that you're trying to write about? What resources and what type of sort of information am I presenting? Are the resources adequate adequate to the information I'm presenting? And how am I interpreting the information? Are there other interpretations that are equally valid that someone could say, well, you said this, but it could be. For many years, the secular archaeological community said, oh, there's no such thing as the House of David because we have never found any archaeological evidence of David that he existed. Pretty soon they started pulling out some artifacts from the ground that talked about the House of David. And so from that, they knew that King David existed. What was wrong with what they said? Well, they were speaking out of a position of ignorance. Just because someone had not yet pulled out something from archaeology that showed that David existed up to that point doesn't mean that David did not exist. It simply means that someone had not pulled a piece of archaeological evidence out of the ground to that point. So were there other equally valid interpretations to what the secular archaeologists were saying? Yes. The biblical archaeologists were saying, wait a minute, there could be something in the ground there. We just haven't pulled it out yet. And they were right. What are the central concepts to my line of thinking? Can I expound on them? Can I list them? Do I even know what they are? What conclusions am I going to come to? And what are the premises, the presuppositions to make those conclusions? What are the assumptions I'm making? And are they valid to make those assumptions or not? Am I valid to assume that the sky is blue? Well, we are, of course, the sky is blue. But unless it's cloudy, then it's gray. So it's a valid assumption. There was a story about a young man from Minnesota. He wanted to get married to his sweetheart. And he was going to get married. They finally set the wedding date, and it was in the month of July. And so on their wedding date, it had been a tradition in their family that the men of that family would run across the lake because they had property on the lake, and the men would always run across the lake. And so on his wedding day, the groom, after they said the I do's and they were at the party afterwards, he says, Mom, I'm going to go run across the lake just like my grandpa did and just like my father did. And the mother said, well, I don't know, son. Of course, the son didn't listen to the mother. And he proceeded to run across the lake. He didn't make but two or three steps before he sunk in. Sunk down into the water. So he got back out wet and said, this time I'm going to do it. So he got a faster start. And he ran, and this time he got six steps in the water before he sank. And then he did it a third time. He said, well, what can I do? Well, maybe if I go off the dock. So he runs off the dock, gets a real fast movement going, gets to the dock, and he runs and doesn't even make it one step. He just sinks to the bottom. Completely soaked, he comes to his mother, and he says to her, Mother, why couldn't I run across the lake like my father and grandfather did? What is wrong with me? And the mother answered wisely, well, first of all, son, you are not the man that your grandfather or your father was. Secondly, your grandfather and father both got married in January and the lake was frozen when they ran across it. So the young man was making the wrong assumptions about that he could run across the lake, because he was thinking he could run across in July instead of December when his father and grandfather had. That's just a story about a humor story about that, about an assumption that was made that was not correct. But in a more serious way, we should be asking that about our writing when we do that at every step, actually. Are our assumptions valid? Is our evidence valid? Is our information and sources valid? Is my thinking valid? Always asking, is what I'm saying truthful? Is it valid? Is it real? Is it logical? Is it reasonable? Is it presented in a way that other people will be able to follow my line of logic and reasoning. There is another thing that is important to being a critical thinker who writes. And that is writing with integrity. We're not just talking about plagiarism. Now, we will not put up with plagiarism. Plagiarism is wrong. Plagiarism is when we copy from other people and claim it to be our own. There is various forms of plagiarism. For instance, in the sciences, a person cannot literally quote from another source. They merely summarize what other sources have said. Other disciplines do allow quotes, usually theology and philosophy have direct quotes in them. So in most of what you do in the Christian Leaders Institute will, of course, allow direct quotes as long as you credit the person and the article or book properly in the APA format for that quote. It is vitally important that you do not plagiarize. It is not acceptable. It is not Christian. It has no place in the person of a Christian's writing, who's a Christian who writes. It has no place in a critical thinker. A critical thinker does not need to plagiarize anything. The plagiarism is very easy to do today. I know that. It's very easy to go to the internet and copy something. But it is wrong. It is lying. It is stealing. And it is unethical. And no leader, no Christian, let alone no Christian leader, should ever practice any type of plagiarism. Because the critical thinker writes with integrity. When we are inquiring about the validity and truthfulness, precision, and accuracy of our own writing, we're engaging in a process of self-assessment and self-improvement. So that it's not only our paper that has integrity, it's ourselves as well. How can we say that we are a person of integrity if we're not writing to the best of our ability? Integrity is valued highly in the world, but it is something that's going very quickly away in many instances. It's often very hard to find people of integrity. So be a person of integrity. Do your best on your papers. Do your best to critically think. And do not succumb to either the plagiarism side or not thinking properly about what you're writing. Integrity and writing will give us a satisfaction that our piece is valid, it preserves the truth, and it's well written. And it's a wonderful opportunity for the critical thinker when they write something to logically stimulate others and cultivate their critical thinking as well. I've often mentioned C.S. Lewis in these talks. He is a wonderful Christian apologist, probably the main Christian apologist from the 20th century, who has spurred on, through his critical thinking, has spurred millions of Christians around the world across multiple denominations into thinking properly about Christ in the Bible. Now, it doesn't mean I always agree with him, but I agree with him on most things, and I appreciate his way of thinking. I appreciate the way he, C.S. Lewis, wrote with integrity and gave us insight into the critical thinking of this great literary genius, this great apologist of the 20th century named C.S. Lewis. If we're making disciples as leaders, what happens if we write something for these leaders without the integrity we just talked about? We plagiarize, or we don't do it to the best of our ability. We are mediocre. What happens to our evangelizing? What happens to our preaching? What happens to our teaching, our counseling, our worship? Well, our evangelism becomes and our preaching and teaching becomes mediocre. Our counseling becomes, at best, mere platitudes that do nothing to address the core issues that need to be addressed, especially in Christian counseling. And our worshiping becomes worshiping of ourselves rather than worshiping of the one true God. If we are going to be leaders, we have to have integrity. Without integrity in our writing, in our preaching, in our teaching, in our evangelism, in our counseling, in our worship of God, we are not leaders. I'm going to go so far to say we should even question our Christianity if we're not doing everything with integrity to the honor and glory of Christ Jesus. That is what a Christian does. So I hope as we have gone through this that you will see the value of critical thinking and writing, and that you will practice this critical thinking and writing with integrity, because the critical thinking builds integrity, and the critical thinking is actually necessary for the integrity of our writing, which will reflect upon our own personal integrity. So I thank you for being with me, and I look forward to our next unit, our next section of Unit 10. We will see you next time. God bless.